I'm going to be speaking on a topic of marriage, and I got a marriage joke. Is that all right? Oh my. Okay. So a man tells his doctor, he says, I got a problem. I'm incapable of doing all the things around the house that I used to do. And so the doctor examined him. And then the man says to the doc, okay, tell me in plain English, what's wrong with me? And the doctor says, well, in plain English, you're just lazy. So the man kind of looks back at the doctor and says, listen, now give me a medical term so I can tell my wife. Okay. Some enjoyed that more than others. All right. About a week and a half ago, I had the opportunity to be in Saratoga Springs and spent one night there in a Hilton Garden Inn. And I want to tell you a little bit about the experience. After check-in, I went to the computer room. There's two computers there and did some work on one. There was a second door in this room, and it was the back door to the front desk. And so on two separate occasions, the door opened and a person walked through. I'm sitting at the computer, and on both occasions, the persons spoke to me first. They walked through and they saw me, had never seen them before. They spoke to me. The next day, upon checkout, I was leaving the room, and the next room down, there was a lady standing there. She was the head of housekeeping. And she says, how was your stay? And we struck up a conversation, probably talked a good 10 minutes. I went down to the front desk and checked out. And I said something to the lady across the counter from me. I said, wow, you all do really good at customer service in terms of speaking first. And she says, yeah. She says, we live by the 10 and 5 rule. Now, remember about a year and a half, I shared with you the 10 and 5 rule after staying in a Hilton Garden Inn in Albany. And so this is a Hilton Garden Inn in Saratoga. And she says the 10 and 5 rule is this. If a customer is 10 feet away, I will acknowledge them and say something to them. If they get 5 feet from me, I will engage them in conversation. And so they have built a culture in their hotel based on the 10 and 5 rule. And so these staff spoke to me first. They initiated conversation, which is wonderful. There's another lady at the front desk, and she said, yeah. She says, if somebody calls down and asks for a towel, we usually take up 2 or 3. We try to do a little extra. As I thought about that experience, and today I want to talk on the second mile servant. The second mile servant. Now, about 2 years ago in June, I looked this up in my files. I spoke on the same thing, and we're going to use the same text, only I'm going to approach it in a totally different way today than we did a couple years ago. But I want to talk about a second mile servant. Now, the Pancake Tent was an amazing week, and we're going to watch some video a little bit later. But there were a lot of people who are second mile servants. You know what they do? They go the extra mile, and instead of taking one towel, they'll take 2 or 3. A second mile servant will always take the first step in acknowledging someone else. They won't wait for people to come to them. They're going to go to them first and greet them and initiate it. You know, when a church is filled with people who live by a 10 and 5 rule, that's a magnetic, attractional thing to an outsider, just like it is at a hotel. And so today I want to share with you, about a second mile service. Now, servant, let me give you the backdrop of our text. It's from Genesis chapter 24. Abraham is up in years. His wife Sarah has passed away. He has a promised son called Isaac, and the father wants to find a wife for his son. Now, in that day and in that culture, the parents would arrange for the marriage partner. Today in America, it's totally different. We're more individualistic, and the final choice usually goes with the person. But in this day and age, Abraham, his father, was going to find a wife for his son Isaac. He didn't want any kind of wife. He had some parameters of what he wanted that person to be. So here's what happened. Abraham's servant, it's not named in this chapter, but they think it's Eliezer. He says, listen, Eliezer, I'm going to send you to our relatives, which are about 450 miles away, and I want you to find a wife that's compatible for my son Isaac, who's about 40. So that's what he did. He called his servant, and he says, listen, God will go before you. This has got to get done, and I want you to go forward. So that's kind of the gist of the story. And so what I want to do is talk about a second-mile servant in relationship to the servant of Abraham trying to find a wife for Isaac. So I'm going to walk through this and share with you three simple thoughts about finding that kind of person. Now, let me say this. If you're looking for a husband or a wife, or you are counseling and advising someone about that, this is a great chapter. And we're going to lift out some points that everybody can think about when you try and find the right person, husband or wife, or you're talking to people about that. We're going to walk through this chapter and list some things out. So let's get started. Number one. The first thing in finding that kind of a person who's a second miler is, number one, Abraham's servant prayed for success. I mean, he's going to find a wife and he prays about it first. That's a great way to start. You know, the prayer cards at the pancake tent that were in the fishbowl? First time this has ever happened that I can remember. Somebody filled it out, and here's what it said. Their prayer request, I need a husband. Now, it kind of struck me, but you know, prayer is always the best way to start if you are looking for a husband or a wife. Saturate it with prayer, because that's what these guys did. Now, read with me Genesis 24, 12 in your notes. This is the servant. Let's read it. Then he prayed, O Lord, God of my master Abraham, give me success today and show me kindness to my master Abraham. The servant said, God, give me success in finding a wife for Isaac. If you're looking for a wife or a husband, listen, prayer is the best place to start. You know why? You're asking God to lead you, your creator, to lead you to the person that he would want you to have. Huge. Pray about it. The supernatural, God himself, being involved with a decision of who I should marry. Abraham is also a man of faith. Read verse 7. It's in your notes. The Lord, the God of heaven, who brought me out of my father's household in my native land and who spoke to me and promised me on oath, saying, to your offspring, I will give this land. He will send his angel before you so that you can get a wife for my son from there. Abraham, the father of faith in the Bible, says, the angel of God himself will go before you to help you figure this out. I mean, he had faith in God, the servant had faith, and they prayed about it. Number one, if you're looking, the best thing to do is start praying about it. Say, God, direct my life. Help me in this area. Number two, the second principle pulling out of this story is this. Abraham requested not to get a wife from the Canaanites. Abraham said to his servant, do not Do not get a wife for Isaac from the Canaanites. So let's read verses 2 through 4. It's in your notes. He said to the chief servant in his household, the one in charge of all he had, put your hand under my thigh. I want you to swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of the earth, that you will not get a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites, among whom I am living, but will go to my country and my own relatives and get a wife for my son. So the question is, what's a Canaanite? The Canaanites were a group of people among whom Abraham was living, but here's the simplest definition. The Canaanites were faithless people. Isaac and Abraham were a family that were faith-filled people. The Canaanites, faithless. And so the Abraham tells the servant, do not bring home a wife among the Canaanites. Matter of fact, it says in this text that, you know, in that day and age, if you put your hand under someone's thigh, you swore an oath that you would do this, and that's what happened. They said, put your hand under my thigh and swear on an oath. It's kind of like raising your hand, putting your hand on the Bible, and saying, I'm not going to do this. You know, I promise to tell the truth. And so this was a pretty serious deal. Abraham knew a few things. Let me tell you what I think he knew. He knew that outer beauty had attracting power. In America, beauty is a big deal. We are attracted to beautiful things. Here's the other thing. Abraham knew that inner beauty had staying power. Inner beauty had staying power. Here's how you apply this. Depending what's on the inside of the person is a big deal. The Canaanites were faithless. God was not on their radar. Isaac and Abraham and the family were faith-filled. God was the centerpiece of the radar. And he says, do not get a faithless woman for my wife. Now, Paul goes on to talk about this in 2 Corinthians 6 in the New Testament. Let's read together verses 14 and 15 on the backside of your notes. Do not be yoked together with unbelievers. For what do righteousness and wickedness have in common? Or what fellowship can light have with darkness? What harmony is there between Christ and Belial? What does a believer have in common with an unbeliever? What agreement is there between the temple of God and idols? For we are the temple of the living God. Here's the kernel thought. He says, do not be yoked together a believer with an unbeliever. When you're thinking about getting married, be careful who you're choosing. Here's a visual. I want you to think of a horse. It's got some height to it. I want you to think of a cow. They're kind of medium height. And the two are together. A yoke is a wooden instrument that connects the two together. If you got a horse and you got a cow, it's pretty difficult. It's hard to harness the two. You know why? The two cannot stay in step with each other. Their strides are different. And Paul is saying, listen, when you as a believer, if you think you're going to join with an unbeliever, he says, don't do that because your stride and your steps will be different. There's I ran across something called the rule of horses. Two-horse rule. Here's what it says. If you take one horse and it can pull 700 pounds, you take a second horse and it can pull 800 pounds. That's 1,500 total. But if you put the two together and they're in stride and can push forward together, they can carry 3,000 pounds. You see, when you're yoked together equally, a believer with a believer, there's great power in that. And so Abraham and also Paul in the New Testament says, listen, Don't get somebody that is faithless from the Canaanites. Don't be unequally yoked because you want to stay in stride together going forward. A few months ago, we watched a video. It's called Carly's Story. Does anybody remember that? Okay, she, 16-year-old kid, and her mother and sister were killed tragically in a car accident. And she said her life just went into a tailspin. And for 8 years, she just went down paths that she shouldn't have, that just kind of soiled her life, and they weren't healthy. She's in her apartment. She's age 24. She's on her knees before God and said, God, I just need Jesus in my life. And she surrendered her life to him. And she got on the right track. The next 5 years, she went on mission trips. I think there were a total of 25 countries she visited. She was all over the place. But her father, who was a pastor, gave her advice about her husband. Let me share it with you. He said to her, Carly, if you're looking for a husband, I want you to run your race. What that means is, Carly, you follow Jesus, you engage him, you engage in serving others, and you make your life count as a single person first. You follow him. You just pursue him. Run your race. So she did that. And then the father gave her the second piece of advice. Carly, after you have run your race a while, look around to see who is running with you. And that's what she did. She met her husband on a missions trip. You know what? She was running her race. And you know what happened? He was running his. And they ended up getting married. And you will find the person you're looking for if you are running your race to the best of your ability to follow Jesus and serve him. That's how it works in God's kingdom. And so we find here that Abraham says, listen, you're going out to find a wife for Isaac, but do not swear, promise me, you will not bring back a faithless person. Now here's the deal. Canaanites, we use that term in a general sense, can be good-looking, attractive, nice people. They can look good, smell good, feel good, but I tell you what, the difference between the two is being faithless and faith-filled. And Abraham told Isaac, make sure you find somebody who is faith-filled. So number one, pray about it. Say, God, direct my life. I need your help. Number two, know before you go that, hey, you got to get the right kind of person who is faith-filled. Number three, the third point he makes is this. Abraham's servant was looking for a wife for Isaac who had the character of a second-mile servant. Read with me verses 13 and 14 in your notes. May it be that when I say to a girl, please let down your jar that I may have a drink, and she says, drink, and I'll water your camels too, let her be the one you have chosen for your servant Isaac. By this I'll know that you have shown kindness to my master. So this guy travels about 450 miles, a month's journey. He has 10 camels with him. And he prays and he says, God, two requests. When I ask a maiden who is close to the well to give me a drink, I'm going to see if she says yes and gives me water. Then, the second request, I'm not going to say anything, but I want her to initiate a willingness to water my camels. That was his prayer. So he goes to the well. He finds a young maiden, and her name was Rebecca. And it says she was a virgin. She was beautiful. She'd never been with a man. And she came out, and he says, could I have something to drink? And she says, sure. She passed test number one. Then he waited. And she, on her own, said, can I water your camels too? It was a confirmation that he felt God was in it, and this is the one. Now, I want you to notice that she initiated this whole thing about watering the camels. There were 10. This is not one or two buckets of water. If you have 10 camels, they can slurp gallons. She could have been busy a few hours. But here's the, I thought about this. Why was this so important? And here's what I came up on. The reason he wanted a second mile servant, the wife for Isaac, is because this. Isaac, back home, was a second mile servant. You see, that's who he was. And so he wanted to make sure he found a wife that was a second miler for Isaac. And so sure enough, that's what happened. And then it says, without saying a word, the man, the servant, watched her closely to learn whether or not the Lord had made his journey successful. I want one other point here. He watched her closely. If you're looking for a husband or a wife, you don't have to get really super engaged or involved at first. You watch them from a distance. You know what you watch for? Where do they go and where do they not go? What do they say and what do they not say? I mean, you just watch their life. So the servant was watching this young lady to see if she would deliver on her verbal commitment. And she did. She delivered. So we find here that Rebecca eventually became Isaac's wife. And he watched. And so if you're looking for that husband or wife, one other thought. Are they interested in church or are they not? Do they have an interest in spiritual things or do they not? Because we found in principle, too, that is a key element in getting and finding the right person for you if you're faith-filled. You want to make sure that there's compatibility and faith so that you can push together through life. So number one, Abraham prayed. So did the servant. Number two, Abraham said, do not get a wife who is faithless. Get one that's faith-filled. And number three, look for the character of a second-mile servant. Well, a few thoughts as I just apply this to our church family. Here's what it means to be a second-mile servant in our church. I want us to live by the 10 and 5 rule. Everybody here. If a new person comes in, you're the first to speak to them. If they come within 5 feet of you, you engage them in conversation. In the church or the Harvey Center, it's not just sitting at our own table, but we look around and say, who's here that I don't know? I will go to them. Works in a hotel. You win people over by being an initiator of kindness and goodness. Here's something else. A second-mile servant will offer to water camels. You'll give somebody a drink, but you'll say, hey, can I water your camels? Not only that, they may ask you for a towel, and you will take two or three. That's what it means to be a second-miler. So I took a lot of pictures at the fairground this year, and I put together a video. And this video is dedicated to second-mile servants. Now, I thought about this, and one of the greatest joys I had that week at the pancake tent, you know what it was? Working with second-mile people. There is no greater joy when somebody is willing to pay the price in different ways to make something happen. When you work with second-mile servants, it is a sheer joy because they're in it be in it. And so that was one of my greatest joys. It was just fun working with people who really gave themselves during that week. So I've got this video. It's 8 minutes long. Sorry, there's over 300 pictures or thereabouts in this thing. They go quick, so keep an eye out. Now, I got to tell you, I couldn't get everybody in it because I wasn't there on every shift. So if you're not in this, don't take offense. It's sorry, you're still a second miler, but I just didn't have everybody's picture. But I want to commit this or dedicate it to the people who made it happen. You know who you are, and I just say thank you. You're an amazing group of people we're just blessed to work together. So after the video, Jack's going to come and we'll start our communion service. So let's listen to the video.
I cannot seem to drive, and if I'm honest, there's quite a bit of fear. To sit here in this silence and really hear you, what will you ask of me? Will I listen to your voice when you speak?
There is no one like our God. There is no one In your bulletin, there's a half-page flyer. And while you're turning to that, you saw that in the last slide, but it's a good reminder. I'd written in my notes, the best example of a second-mile servant was Jesus himself. In fact, his second-mile servant to others cost him his life. And what an example for all of us. He continually gave and he gave.